Talk 580 KMJ presents Hometown Heroes, honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, coming to you every Saturday afternoon here on News Talk 580 KMJ and online at kmjnow.com. Each week we visit with veterans of World War II, and the idea is to honor them for their service and their sacrifice, to preserve their stories so they'll be remembered long after they're gone, and hopefully along the way inspire the rest of us too with some of the things that they endured, some of the things that they did more than six decades ago. And before we get to our guest today, it was 65 years ago this week that Allied soldiers began liberating German death camps across Europe. My late grandfather was scarred by the horrors that he witnessed when his division liberated Buchenwald. And if you're a regular listener to this program, you might remember Joe Rivas sharing his experiences at another camp in Nordhausen, Germany. Joe still has the Nazi banner that he tore down from a tower there. Maybe you remember him talking about that. And Monday in Sacramento, Joe will be recognized on the floor of the State Assembly. It's part of the Holocaust Memorial Week. Each year at this time, Valley Assemblyman Mike Valines makes an effort to honor either a Holocaust survivor or someone who participated in the liberation of prisoners from those horrible camps. This year, Joe Rivas has been selected. Joe and his family will be in the assembly chambers along with Holocaust survivors and other veteran liberators from around the state nominated by other assemblymen. I have more info on this at kmjnow.com and also on the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. But I just wanted to share kudos to Mike Valines and his great staff for honoring one of our local heroes. And I know it's going to be an unforgettable experience for Joe and his family. Never underestimate the toll exacted by the horrific things that these soldiers had to witness. To call it the stuff of nightmares, I think, is to oversimplify a little bit. Anyway, that all happens Monday in Sacramento, but we have a shortened show today because of Bulldog Baseball coming up at 1:45.
My guest today is 87 years old. He lives in Fresno. It's Jake Misakian, and maybe you've seen him at a car show with his 34 Ford Roadster with the flames on the side of him. I don't think he was driving that back in World War II. Jake, let's get started where I like to start with so many veterans. December 7th, 1941. Everybody seems to remember where they were that day and how they heard about the attacks on Pearl Harbor. What do you remember about that day?
Well, December 7th, I was in Monterey, California. My brother was working there at the fish cannery, Del Monte Fish Cannery.
Mm-hmm.
And I was driving truck as a young kid. And so he says, come on over here. He says, I get $80 a week, 1941. That's good money.
Mm-hmm.
So I went over there, and women are all lined up in rows, and I emptied all the heads and tails that they cut off the sardines.
Mm-hmm.
So I was making $70 a week. Oh, I had a good time. I worked hard, but, I mean, I made some good money for wages.
For an 18-year-old kid, that's not bad.
Yeah.
So that's where you were when you heard the Japanese had attacked?
Yes.
What did that mean to you at the time?
Oh, I just felt so bad. In town in Monterey, well, the cops came by and they were shooting through the windows, putting out lights because there was one of the submarines over close to us.
Mm-hmm.
So they had to shoot out the lights in the building.
A lot of people don't realize what kind of panic there was along the coast. And Monterey's right on the west coast.
Yeah,
there was this fear of Japanese submarines. There's even shots fired by Japanese submarines.
Yes.
So that must have been a chaotic kind of existence for you.
It bothered the heck out of us.
So what did you do?
I didn't do nothing. My brother says I got to go back to camp. He got leave from camp in the Army in Monterey.
Mm-hmm.
He got leave to go work in a fish cannery. So when he got me to come over there, and after I was there for a while, he said, I got to go back to the base. So he went back to the base, then he went overseas.
And how long was it till you joined the military? Were you drafted or did you enlist?
No, 1943.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And you ended up with the 801st Engineer Aviation Battalion. How did that happen? I'm sure you didn't say, hey, I want to be an engineer.
No, I had, I was pretty good at heavy equipment as mm-hmm. a young kid. And
is that from growing up on a farm?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I got drafted. And I was going to volunteer, but they got me ahead of time. I got drafted.
Beat you to the punch.
So anyway, what I did was go over there, and they took me in the Army, and they sent me to Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And I told them, I says, if we come back to Boise, Idaho from Florida.
That's a pretty big difference.
Yeah. And they told me to that I was going to be in the engineers. And I had a different MOS number, and I rode motorcycles all my life. So anyway, the guy says, I think that's an ordnance, Jake, or something you can teach him motorcycle, the people how to ride motorcycles.
That sounds like
so
a fun job.
So I said,
job.
Boy, that's just fine. So we got into Boise, Idaho at the camp downfield.
Mm-hmm.
And the sergeant was there. He says, come on over here, all of us. So anyway, I said, hey, Sarge, I says, where's the motorcycles at? He says, what? Where's the motorcycles at? I says, well, are they in a garage? There was a bunch of garages there. He says, yeah. He opened the door, and he gave me a shovel and a pick, and he says, clean out around the barracks.
So much for the motorcycles,
yeah,
huh?
So anyway, I was in the engineers.
Well,
yeah.
And you talk about Gowan Field, and if people are interested in seeing some pictures, I'm going to link on our website, kmjnow.com, some pictures from Gowan Field during this time. And there's even a picture on a website of the 801st Engineer Aviation Battalion. Maybe one of these little dots in the picture is Jake parading through Nampa, Idaho, led by the Gowan Field Band. You ever remember taking a walk in a parade like that?
Oh, yes. Yes, I sure did.
And you wished you would have had a motorcycle, huh?
We never got no passes unless we get first place. Yeah.
But your whole war experience was a lot more than marching in parades. They would send you to Europe, then the Pacific. By the time this show's over, we're going to hear what happened to Jake's finger in Japan, and also the horrific plane crash that he witnessed that the memories are still very crystal clear of. But before you ended up in the Pacific, you were in Europe. What do you remember about heading across the Atlantic?
Yes, we were in Europe, Azores. We built a big airfield there for the supply of our bombers and stuff going to England and different parts of the country for the invasion.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we built a big airfield.
I've heard about some of those airfields.
Yeah.
Guys from North Africa would use them as well on their
right.
way to Europe.
Yes.
And sometimes they were kind of hard to find, depending on the weather.
Yes, that's right.
You never had any trouble like that?
Oh, we've had some accidents up in the air in the fog. B-24s, two of them got together up there, and we had to go rescue them, but most of them were dead.
Now, what kind of work is that, putting an airstrip together on an island? And I guess you're pretty much starting from scratch, right?
Yeah, from dirt and raw land. It doesn't mean anything, and we graded it, and then we turned around and compacted the dirt, and then we turned around and put asphalt in it,
mm-hmm.
and we made some of the best airfields you can hear of.
And I imagine you felt some degree of responsibility knowing that planes are going to be taken off and landing and people's lives are going to be at stake.
I was a corporal,
mm-hmm.
and I got it one morning. That evening, I went to town to see my wife. She came into Boise, Idaho. Actually, it was Nampa, Idaho then.
Right.
We were maneuvers at Snake River.
Right, right.
So anyway, she come over to stay with me for a few days, and I snuck into town. The sergeant didn't give me a pass. So I was a corporal, and I was glad to get that. I got broke that evening. Yeah, I got broke that evening. So I spent about a month and a half in stockade there with some of the rest of the soldiers.
So you got busted for being AWOL.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I was late on pass 8 hours.
Lessons learned.
Yes.
But I'm sure it was worth it at the time.
Yeah.
So you spent about a year and a half in the European theater.
Yeah.
You constructed the airfields on the Azores.
Yes.
Any other things, any other experiences from your time in the European theater that stand out for you?
Oh, yes, it was fine over there. And the people were nice, the civilians over there. And I used to go aboard the planes, a lot of the B-25s, B-17s, B-24s. I'd go hitch a ride with our flyers.
Mm-hmm.
They'd give me a ride.
Yeah, how did they treat you guys? Did
they treat us very good. Yeah.
They knew that you were a part of the team that kept them flying, huh?
Yeah, I used to go aboard and fly with them. I'd sneak aboard.
What was the first time that you remember getting a taste of the brutality of war and the harsh reality of people dying around you?
Well, it was pretty rough because they were pretty bad shape, just like Saipan. It was bad. Okinawa was bad in the beginning, and it's one of the largest islands there.
Mm-hmm.
And we built two air bases there. And the Japanese airplanes used to come over there and bomb and everything. And we'd hide for cover.
And there's not always cover when you're looking for cover, is there?
Yeah.
What?
The typhoon hit us one time. Very, very bad.
Tell me about that. You were on a ship when the typhoon hit?
No, we were
on land.
Uh-huh. And what happened is we had some dump trucks with the beds up in the air next to our tents so that they wouldn't blow our tents over. Well, it rained so bad and the wind was so strong that the dump trucks were in gear, but they still slid into the tents.
Mm.
Yeah.
You hadn't seen that back home in Fresno, I'm sure.
No.
You know, another thing, I know we're bouncing around a little bit here, and we're going to get to some really extreme experiences that Jake had in the Pacific. But in looking in, and I'm linking this website at kmjnow.com, the 801st Engineer Aviation Battalion has a really good detailed website. And one of the pictures I saw on there was a bunch of you guys sitting around in the Azores watching a bullfight.
I never did watch a bullfight.
You didn't get to make, I bet you heard about it.
Oh,
huh?
yes, they had, but they don't believe in killing the bull.
That's right. What about fights within the ranks of you guys? Did you ever have any rivalries with any of your fellow soldiers or ever get into it with anybody over anything?
Well, we had some English soldiers over there with us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, on the island.
And everybody got along okay?
They got along fine.
You never got yourself in any more trouble after your AWOL in Nampa?
No.
You made mention a moment ago to some of the spots in the Pacific that you experienced. When you made that shift from the European theater and went over to the Pacific, could you notice right away the difference in the way that war was waged in the Pacific?
Yes, I sure do. Because we didn't really have a war in Europe.
Not where you were, because you were building bases and they were...
Yeah.
Long-distance bombing from those bases.
Yes, that's right.
But in the Pacific, you're getting shot at.
Yeah.
When you think back at moments where maybe scared isn't the right word, but you thought, I don't know if I'm going to wake up tomorrow. I don't know if I'm going to make it through today.
Yeah.
What are some of those moments that stand out for you?
Oh, you just let it go. The noise and planes come by, let it go in one ear and out the other. I don't give it no thought.
Was it a situation where you were able to focus on the task that you guys had to do and kind of block the rest of that out?
Yes, that's right.
And pretty much building runways is what you did throughout the war?
That's what we did. The colonel we had, Colonel Glenn, he was the greatest guy there was. And by golly, he just kept us all busy.
Well, I know there's some really some stories that you've told me already, one about a plane crash and another one about the finger that you still have, but it won't bend for you anymore. And I tell you what, we're going to take a break right here, and when we come back, we're going to hear from Jake about those two stories. Jake Misakian, 87 years old, of Fresno, is our guest today. It's Hometown Heroes on News Talk 580 KMJ.
This is Hometown Heroes. Honoring everyday Americans who answer the call of duty on 580 KMJ.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes. A reminder for more information about the 801st Engineer Aviation Battalion, which our guest today, Jake Misakian, served with. You can go to our website, kmjnow.com. Jake served in the European theater before being sent to the Pacific, where with the 801st Aviation Battalion, he helped build runways all over the place, in places like Eniwetok, Guam, Okinawa, Saipan, Okinawa was the scene of a lot of his most vivid memories. But let's talk about one of the fun ones first here, Jake. You mentioned earlier that someone told you you might get a job training people in how to ride motorcycles, and then it ended up just cleaning out a barn. But somewhere in the Pacific, you actually came across a motorcycle.
Yeah.
It was a good-looking Harley, just had one problem.
Yeah.
Was missing a wheel?
Missing a rear wheel and fork springs.
So what'd you do about that?
Well, we put it together at our shop. We used Caterpillar fork springs, Caterpillar valve springs for the forks up on top.
Uh-huh.
And got an Indian rear wheel my buddy got for me.
Now, I like this story. You said, I got to find a wheel somewhere for this Harley.
Yeah, and from a Harley.
And he says he can get you one.
Yeah.
What was the deal? What did you have to give him in order for him to
just give him rides now and then.
Okay. But where was he going to find a Harley wheel out in the Pacific?
Well, the MP's.
He would rob one from an MP's motorcycle.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with that.
But it was an Indian instead of a Harley.
Well, and here's the thing. You told me you didn't get in any more trouble, but here you are sending someone to steal a rear wheel from a motorcycle, and he didn't find a Harley wheel.
I didn't tell him to steal it. He just says, I'll get you one.
And but he brings back the wrong wheel?
Wrong wheel for an Indian.
And this is a problem because the brake is on the opposite side.
Yeah.
So what'd you do about that?
Well, the Harley's got the brake and the drum all together on one side.
Uh-huh.
And we had to make a shaft for the other side for the brake on, or for the Indian brake. Yeah.
But you made it work. That illustrates
Me and a mechanic of mine.
And did it hold up the rest of the time you were there?
Oh, it held up good.
So you were riding a Harley / Indian all over.
Yeah.
All over the island there.
Yeah.
And I think that illustrates for our listeners the technical know-how and the ingenuity that you had over there. And I guess you had a little bit of time on your hands too, huh?
Yeah, we had a little bit.
But you also had some very crazy times. You talked about the typhoon that you encountered. Now, another souvenir, and I don't think you got to bring the motorcycle back with you.
No, I sold it.
But you did bring back something that you found in a cave on Okinawa?
Yes, a Japanese flying suit, brand new, wrapped in like a sack material. Also, the helmet and goggles were in there. But when I got to the States, I like a one-piece suit,
mm-hmm.
and it was a good suit. So anyway, what I did on my motorcycle, I'd go back and forth to Fresno from San Francisco,
mm-hmm.
and sometime in the wintertime it'd rain, and I had this suit, but I wouldn't wear the helmet. Somebody liable to shoot me because they think somebody that lost somebody in the service, it didn't look right, you know.
Sure. Guy flying by on a motorcycle wearing a Japanese flying suit.
Yeah.
Wow, the things that happen during war. And I just the idea of going into a cave to find this sounds a little foolhardy to me. I've heard so many stories about those islands, Okinawa in particular, with all the booby traps and you know, different things that were in caves. But you just walked into a cave and found
it? Yeah, because I was interested, and I didn't know what I was looking for. But when I come across this Jap flying suit, I said to myself, boy, that's just what I needed.
And you still have it today.
Yes.
You also have a lot of memories. And one of the memories is very intense and very vivid and sticks with you today, in part because of some of the injuries you still have. And I want to talk about this a little bit. Now, you don't have a Purple Heart. Maybe you deserve one for some of the things you endured. Tell me about this accident. Now, when people say you're building runways and you're in a construction crew or you're in an engineer battalion, it's not necessarily the front row of troops. You're not always in enemy fire. But this heavy equipment you're operating can be pretty dangerous, too. What happened to you, to your leg, when you were over there?
I'm downstairs at the Yantown Airfield. It's like a flat top coming up. It's up high.
Mm-hmm.
And down below there, I got a bulldozer down there, and I'm just leveling off the ground smooth, just halfway, so it looks better.
Mm-hmm.
So here I watch all the airplanes, because you watch all the airplanes when you're over there at that time, because you don't know whether it's Japanese airplanes or what it is, or whether somebody's going to strafe you.
Sure.
So I see this C-46 airplane coming in, taking off, rather, like this. And he was like a fighter pilot. The wings were up like this, and He's coming down. He's coming down. As soon as he left the airfield. Oh, my goodness. I said to myself, this guy's going to crash. I threw the T8 out of gear, and I run over about half a block away from me. Mm-hmm. I run over there, and my goodness, it crashed. And I'm trying to open the door, and it wouldn't open. I heard some screaming. It wouldn't open. So I run around the other side, and the plane sheared off some of the, where the co-pilot sits, sheared off some of those. And I look down there, and the guy's laying there and barely moving. Well, he died. I tried to help him, and he died. So I run around the other side trying that handle again. What can I do? I want to save some people. And the thing blew up.
Mm.
And when it blew up, it picked me up and threw me back about 15 feet. Mm. So I got up and I start running. I fell down and got up and start running over away from it.
Sure.
Well, here comes the Air Force. The Air Force says, gee, did you see this? I said, yes, I sure did. I was the only one here. He said, oh, my goodness. I told him what I tried to do. And he said, well, that's nice of you. But he said, it blew up. Everybody burned to death. So I didn't wait around to see how many were dead.
Right.
Could have been six. They could have been 10. I don't know. They were prisoners of war to the Japanese, and they were released. Our soldiers got them to fly them to Guam. And that's what happened.
And I imagine that when you heard who was on that plane, that they were Americans who had probably been tortured, certainly had been starving, had been in captivity at the hands of the Japanese for years in some cases, certainly months. And here they are liberated, and they died that way. That must have been hard to...
Yeah,
to...
I still can't get over it. I still think about it.
But it sounds like to me, and you're the one who was there, you tell me, it sounds like you were pretty close to joining them.
Oh, yeah, yeah. If I'd have been there a minute later, it'd blown me.
If you were on the other side of the plane at that point?
Yeah, yeah. I was reaching for the door handle and pulling on it, trying to open it, and it blew up right there. And when it blew up, everything come loose in the airplane.
Mm-hmm.
So the Air Force come by and said, thank you very much. He said, if you'd saved any lives, he says, I've seen that you got a Congressional Medal of Honor. Oh, I says, that's all right. I wanted to save lives. I didn't care about the Congressional Medal of Honor, you know.
But what you do care about now is your injuries that you sustained, and there was another injury working on equipment that hurt your leg pretty hard.
Yeah.
And for a long time, you weren't able to find any documentation all about this plane crash, but more recently, you got some help in that department. Is that right?
Yes, that's on my record. It's been there for 63 years. I've been trying to get a pension out of the Army for that, and so far, it hasn't been working out.
But you were able to find, connect with some witnesses to the plane crash?
Yes, yes.
Tell me how that happened.
This lady, friend of June's, my girlfriend, not a friend, but she got to meet her and saw it in a magazine, a veterans magazine. What she did is help veterans out.
Uh-huh.
So she looked all over the 801st Engineers Aviation Battalion, and she got a hold of them. I lost all my records when I was riding my motorcycle to go to work in Eureka.
Hmm.
And I lost all my records on a Greyhound bus when I sent my suitcase aboard. And there was the book and, you know, folder and everything, what we did and everything. And she made one of those up for me through another one that she copied.
Mm-hmm.
And then she turned around and got in touch with June, and June got in touch with her. And she found three witnesses. You know what they said?
Hmm.
We were putting a roof on the building when this airplane went through and came off, and then we saw it crash. But they said one guy got out of it.
Huh.
Oh, is that right? Who was the guy? I don't know, but one guy got out because he was running away. That was me.
We know who that one guy is now. So isn't that something that all these years later, and this was just recently this happened, right?
1945.
I mean, when you found out that about the other witnesses.
Oh, yes. Not too long, about a year ago, Joan.
Yeah.
So all these years later, these people think you were a survivor of the crash. They find out, no, you were someone else. And I imagine that was neat for you to know that someone else actually saw this, and you weren't the only one trying to tell this story.
Yeah, there was nobody there but them three guys on the roof over there, away from the airfield. They're up high, too, and they saw it and come down.
I bet that was a good feeling when they corroborated that.
Yeah.
So that was probably the most intense experience that you had during your time in the military, seeing the plane crash.
It picked me up and threw me back about 15 feet.
I can't imagine
I got up and run like heck.
And there's another thing that sticks with you that that has to do with everything you do every day. You know, we take our hands so much for granted, and you've got a pinky finger that won't bend.
Yeah.
And I imagine sometimes someone notices that, and they say, well, why doesn't your pinky finger bend? And why don't you tell our listeners what you tell them?
A friend of June's, they lost a little finger, and they got a, Purple Heart.
Yeah.
And she says, Jake, how come you didn't get a Purple Heart? I says, well, I got what?
A good conduct medal?
Yeah, good conduct medal. I said, I don't need a Purple Heart. I got a good conduct medal.
They didn't know about the motorcycle. That's why they gave you the good conduct medal. But so tell me about your pinky and what happened. Now, you had a Japanese prisoner, or you saw a Japanese soldier and you were trying to take him prisoner?
Yeah, I got the rifle on him. I snuck up on him in some bushes.
And this was on Okinawa?
This is on Okinawa.
Uh-huh.
And so, anyway, he had a rifle, and he was holding it up with a bayonet on it, but I'm smarter than he was, because I'll tell you what, I snuck up and I was quiet about it too. So he was surprised. I put the barrel of my rifle in his stomach, and he still had to hold the gun.
Right.
So I went to slap him across the face. I says, drop it. And I went like this, drop it, two or three times, and he let the rifle go. And when he let it go, I swung, and it hit the bayonet.
Uh-huh.
You know.
His bayonet sliced your finger off.
Yeah.
So how was it? Was it clean to the bone? Was it hanging by
some
skin?
Oh, no, it was right up to the bone.
Uh-huh.
And they sewed it, and that was about it.
And what did you do? I bet you were
pretty
upset. I
took him in prisoner.
Uh-huh.
And my buddy Colin Oilen come by. He's passed away now from Michigan. And he come by. So anyway, I gave him the rifle. And they took him to Stockade, one of the drivers in our Jeep came by. I gave it to him to take to Stockade.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when I used to go to the Stockade, the guy would wave at me.
The prisoner that you
captured?
Yeah,
I'd see him. He'd wave at me. He knew me. I didn't know him right away, but he'd wave at me and wave at me every time he saw me, and I waved at him. We got to be good friends waving at each other. Yeah.
Well, he was, I would imagine, and he's not here to speak for himself, but he was probably pretty scared when he cut your finger off as to what you might do to him.
He was scared that I didn't shoot him, and I was scared that he didn't shoot me.
Uh-huh.
That's the story.
And there was a corpsman there to stitch you up?
Pardon me? Yeah.
Your finger?
Yeah. Doctor sewed it.
I bet it bothered you for a while, though.
Oh, yeah.
And now you just have a good story to tell when you hold that pinky straight up in the air.
Well, it don't mean nothing.
Now, Okinawa, as a lot of people know, was the last major battle of the Pacific.
Yes.
It was an extremely bloody battle. Was there anything about that battle and what you saw from where you were that stands out in your mind that you think people who weren't there should know about the way it was?
Well, the way I see it, we done a good job there. And I figured that we got them beat, and we done a real good job, and stuff started dying down. And they came by later, flew an airplane, surrender over our area, and that was it.
Okinawa was, as I said, the last major battle, so the war is just about over. A lot of people who are in this area at this time have told me that they expected to be part of the invasion of mainland Japan. Is that something that was a possibility for your unit?
No, but they wanted us to sign up if we wanted to go to Korea. And, well, I didn't want to go. And they wanted to make me a sergeant to go to Korea.
Uh-huh.
And they took my buddy, he joined, and later I got in touch with him. He come look me up in Fresno, and he says, boy, what a job that was. It was bad.
So you don't regret not going to Korea?
No, I don't regret it. I wanted to rest up.
Well, and that's what I want to get to. What was it like when you got to come home? Because I imagine when you went overseas, you had no idea all the places you were going to hit, but when you went overseas, you probably weren't sure you were ever going to come back. Is that fair to say?
Yeah. A lot of times you think about it. And then sometimes you think, well, if I get a bullet through me, they'll send me home.
$1 million wound.
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah. So
you got the wounds. They just weren't worth $1 million.
Yeah.
What did it feel like for you when you finally did make it back to the States? Do you remember when you saw this continent again and if it had some sentimental or special meaning to you?
No, well, we were on a ship. We would come back on a flat top, and it was nice. I was disappointed. I had a Japanese sword.
Mm-hmm.
That was, the Japanese guy told me it was worth $200, a lot of money.
Yeah.
So anyway, we had duffel bags that time about this high,
mm-hmm.
and it was in there, and a Japanese flag. The Navy, somebody in the Navy took them.
Took them from you,
yeah,
huh?
Yeah. Well, they, you know, you go eat, and they ransack you.
But they didn't take your flying suit.
No. That was still wrapped up.
And one more note I should share about that flying suit, the Japanese flying suit that Jake has been telling us about that he found in a cave in the Pacific during World War II. It is going to be donated. Jake and his friend Bill Bennett have decided to donate that to the Veterans Memorial Museum in downtown Fresno. So it will be on display for all of us to go down there and appreciate for years to come. The Veterans Memorial Museum in downtown Fresno, right across from the old Fresno Water Tower. You've heard me talk about it so many times. It's open 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. Monday through Saturday. And a big thanks to Art Hill and all the wonderful volunteers who keep that museum going day in, day out. It's a real treasure here in the Valley. And obviously Jake is well aware of that because he's donating that flying suit there. When you see somebody and they don't really know much about World War II, or they don't know why America was doing what America was, why guys like you were over there doing what you did.
Yes.
What would you tell our audience? Why did you do what you did? And what should they know about your generation of Americans?
For what they did to us, we did the right thing. Very good. We done a very good job, and we done the right thing. We had to have airfields and this in Europe and the Pacific, and we just had to go over and show them what we could do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Did you get to know many of the air crews very well? Did you guys kind of interact with bomber crews as they came through?
The what? Bombardiers?
The bomber crews, like the pilot, the navigator, the bombardier, all of those airmen, did they kind of interact with you guys, or did you kind of stay separate?
No, we kind of stay separate. If one of them come by, they'd talk to us or something like that or something, mm-hmm. you know. In fact, one of the Air Force guys bought my motorcycle.
Uh-huh.
He said, I hear you're going back to the States, huh? Yeah. He says, you want to sell your motorcycle? I said, well, I'm thinking about it. I'm going to leave the next day. What am I? I says, you got $200? Yep. But I heard something was wrong with it. Yeah, I had a flat tire the other day. That's what was wrong with it. Yes, I says $200. Gave me $200. Otherwise, I'd have left it right there.
You didn't tell him it was pieced together from two different makes?
He didn't care. I told him.
He didn't care.
Yeah.
When you look back at all your time in the military and the time that you spent in the European theater and the Pacific theater, is there one thing that you're most proud of when you look back on all of it?
Yeah, I'm just proud as hell for us winning the war.
Mm-hmm.
And this bothers me about these wars we're having. I'd go again if they take me.
You mean that, huh?
Yeah.
You'd go build a runway tomorrow.
Yeah, I sure would. I'm not in the shape, but I would.
Well, Jake, I've really appreciated hearing some of your stories today. That story of the plane crash alone, I think, really gets everyone's attention. And I'm wondering if when you think back on an experience like that and you realize how close you came to dying that day. What does that say to you? Does that make you not take other things for granted? Does it give you a little different perspective? How do you process that
today? Well, I just say to myself, I was damn lucky. You know, if I'd stayed there just a few seconds more, it blew me away.
Is there anything else that that you would like to share with our listening audience today about you and the guys you served with?
I'm hoping that I'll get my pension from the Army for my injuries. That's about all.
Well, Jake, I want to thank you for serving our country and for talking about it with us today.
Yeah, I appreciate very much being here with you, Paul.
All right, the pleasure's been all mine, and that's Jake Misacki. And again, if you'd like to read more about the unit he served with, the 801st Engineer Aviation Battalion, got some links up on our website, kmjnow.com. You can also go there to find past editions of the program, and we now have it on Facebook as well. Look for the Hometown Heroes page on Facebook. Thanks so much to Jake Misacki, and thanks to you for listening today. Bulldog Baseball against Louisiana Tech is coming up next. This has been Hometown Heroes on News Talk 580 KMJ.